Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there, and thanks once again for joining us. Hope you're having a great weekend and a great start to this new year. As always, we've got a lot to talk about today, including an update on that big recall of some blood pressure medications. We'll get a flu update, and we'll go over some dieting tips for the new year. But first, let's start the show the way we do every week with our co-host, LuCare's Dr. Nirav Patel. Dr. Patel is the chief medical officer at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. He's also an infectious diseases specialist. Dr. Patel, thanks for joining us again.
Great to be here.
So on this first show of 2019, wanted to take a look back at the top health stories for 2018. CNN recently put out their list of the top eight health stories of the past year. Wanted to run these by you. The number eight story, according to CNN regarding health, was what they called the year of the outbreak. The CDC investigated more than two dozen multi-state food outbreaks last year. There was E. coli in romaine lettuce, salmonella in pre-cut melons, cyclospora and fresh vegetables, and many more warnings about tainted meat and cereal. What do we need to know about what happened last year?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that, again, the mass production and distribution of food is a complex process, and potential risk is involved with this. And I think despite a lot of good efforts by folks, these outbreaks seem to have increased. The most surprising one in my mind was actually the one related to the flour. There was contaminated flour, and flour really is doesn't support bacterial growth because it's dry and it desiccates the organisms. And yet there was an outbreak associated with that. And so to me, the number of outbreaks that have occurred and the variety of different organisms, both parasites and bacteria, as well as the different types of foods involved, all speak to the importance of public health measures and of organizations like the CDC to ensure food safety and ensure safety of the public.
In all, more than 28,000 people got sick, 10 died. One in six Americans get some sort of foodborne illness every year. What can we do to protect ourselves?
Well, I think that the key message here is that you got to make sure that food that can get cross-contaminated while being prepared, you got to watch out for that, ensuring that you're washing your hands, ensuring that you're washing fruits and vegetables that are at risk. And then, again, ensuring that you are keeping yourself as healthy as possible by eating well to make sure that you protect yourself from illness.
CNN listed medical marijuana as the number seven big health story for the year. Missourians voted to approve one medical marijuana measure. Illinois is getting its medical marijuana program underway. What's your take on medical marijuana?
Well, I think that there needs to be more research, and this is one of the challenge points because the federal government has continued to list marijuana at Schedule I drug, and so it's hard for scientists to do research on the actual effects or side effects or efficacy of marijuana as a drug, as a pharmaceutical. And so then we're stuck with this limbo world where states are, if you want to say, getting ahead of the federal government. I think there is a potential promise for marijuana, especially in some certain disease states. But we really need much more research to show that benefit and also understand the risks of the drug as well.
The number six health story for the year, a Chinese scientist claiming to have created the first gene-edited baby using the CRISPR method. Now, that raises all sorts of ethical questions about designer babies, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there were some significant ethical concerns in this situation, and we really do not at any level understand the potential implications of doing these gene edits. Again, the promise is huge, but the risk is also huge. The promise to eliminate certain congenital disorders or prevent the onset of certain adult diseases is amazing. But at the same time, again, these concerns related to, you know, these designer babies, as well as concerns related to side effects that are unknown. We just don't know what happens when you mess around with some of these genes and what the side effects of that could be. So I think that there's a number of questions, and this is very concerning from my perspective.
We're talking with our co-host, Luke. Here is Dr. Nirav Patel. He's the chief medical officer at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. The number five medical story for 2018, the record number of cases of that polio-like illness called AFM, acute flaccid myelitis. Tell us about that.
Well, there's been a number of cases that are an increased number of cases of AFM, acute flaccid myelitis, and it's felt to be associated with a viral infection that is a virus related to the polio virus. And so polio, as you may recall, causes a paralysis type disease. And this is what's happening here. The polio virus was eradicated, if you want to say, through the use of vaccination. And in this case, it's felt that this could be viral related, either the body's interaction with the virus or the virus's effects itself. Regardless, we are still not fully convinced of what virus it is and then what the effects are. And so much more research is needed before we can get a handle on this. Nonetheless, I think, you know, in my mind, what parents can do is, one, not freak out. I mean, I think this is still a very rare complication compared to most, but also take precautions, ensuring that your kids learn at a very early age to wash their hands. The viruses are transmitted typically in between kids after improper hand washing. There's concerns for respiratory transmission as well as fecal-oral transmission. And so using good hand hygiene techniques and hand sanitizers and soap and water can protect you, yourself, and your family.
The number four health story for 2018, the FDA fast-tracks two new ways to treat cancer, targeting cancers by their gene mutations and not their location. Is this the future?
Well, I think this is one future. I wouldn't say the future in the sense that we need to come up with more and more novel ways to attack cancer. And this is a very intriguing way where you're looking at very disparate cancers. Most of the time in the past, we sort of said, okay, well, colon cancer is this and lung cancer is this and breast cancer is this. And these are the cocktails that you need for each of those cancers. And rather now, they're looking at the types of mutations that cancer cells undergo. And it may be very disparate cancers from different sources, but they undergo the same types of mutations and therefore are amenable to targeted treatments against those mutations. And so I think, again, it's very intriguing, very exciting, and it's great that there's some actual drugs that are being deployed for patient care. I think this is going to be an exciting area to explore.
The third biggest health story for 2018, according to CNN, is the FDA declaring teen e-cigarette use to be at epidemic levels. How concerned are you by that?
No, I'm absolutely concerned because I think people feel that in general, e-cigarettes are safer than regular cigarettes. And that is probably the case, but they still have effects and side effects. And the developing lung is at risk, and so assuming that there's sort of no toxicity, I think is a problem. And then furthermore, sort of the glamorization, if you want to say, of these e-cigarettes into the point that they look like USB flash drives, or they have these cool designs on them, or things like that. They basically are adopting some of the same strategies. The companies are adopting some of the same strategies that cigarette manufacturers used in the 70s, 80s to attract young smokers. And so I think it's important to call attention to this. I think e-cigarettes are safer than regular cigarettes, but they're not a zero-risk device. And I think younger individuals and their use of e-cigarettes is a risk that needs to be mitigated.
The second biggest story for 2018, U.S. life expectancy dropped for the third straight year. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that the increases in drug overdoses and suicide have really contributed to this. The life expectancy increases of the last 50 years or so have been really associated with the use of vaccinations and decreasing childhood mortality. So when kids live to adulthood because they haven't acquired some sort of childhood infection that leads to their untimely death, then life expectancy in general goes up because then adults are generally healthy and able to live on to older years. Now, what happens is that when adults start dying at an early or premature age, then that really reduces the life expectancy numbers. And so in this case, drug use is really the number one contributor here, and suicide is a close second in that. With both of these increases, then life expectancy is going to go down.
And the number one health story for 2018, according to CNN, are the global warnings about climate change, saying changes in our environment will lead to drastic increases in health problems and deaths worldwide. What do you think of that?
This one's a little intriguing because it's really hard to sort of intuit why global warming and climate change could change our health. And I think once you start looking at the individual things, it really starts tying together. We've already seen large wildfires where cities in California have had some of the worst air quality, worse than some of the hotspots that you think of, like Beijing or New Delhi, and so that really affects the development of kids in those areas. Asthma is on the rise because of these things, and so I think those are important factors. There's infections that are related to ticks or mosquitoes, which typically were not in the United States and then have come to the United States. Zika being a good example of that, where it was sort of surprising that the mosquito sort of was able to start carrying the virus onto the U.S. mainland. And that's kind of one of the first of those types of outbreaks. And I suspect there'll be more. And I think that the other concerns are related to if you want to say, supply-demand mismatch of water, right? Because there's too much water in many areas, places like here in St. Louis or in the Midwest where there's flooding, and then drought in other areas such as the southwest of the United States. And so these are also all reasons why health and climate are tightly related and need to be considered.
Dr. Patel, thanks a lot. Thanks for talking with us about the top health stories for 2018. We'll see what's on the agenda for this year.
Great.
And come back at the end of the show with your health tip for the week.
Absolutely.
Coming up next, we'll take a look at the increasing numbers of flu cases throughout the St. Louis area. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. On the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. We're joined again in studio by our co-host, Flu Cares Dr. Nirav Patel. He's the Chief Medical Officer at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. He's also an infectious diseases specialist. Dr. Patel, wanted to grab you for a few more minutes to talk about the flu numbers in the St. Louis area. The latest numbers are in for the year ending 2018, the flu season ending in 2018. We've had 430 cases so far in St. Louis County, 157 in St. Charles County, and more than 4,100 throughout the state of Missouri. So it seems like the numbers are starting to pick up a little bit. What are you seeing?
Well, absolutely. I think that we're seeing a few more flu cases now, and I think nationwide, as well as locally, the numbers of the flu virus have increased. Most likely, the infection is being caused by the H1N1. At least those are the numbers that are coming up most frequently thus far. And this is probably the same 2009 strain. And luckily, it's been included in the flu vaccine mix over the last several years. And so I'm hopeful that the flu vaccine could provide increased efficacy over this season, but we'll have to wait and see how that goes.
H1N1 in 2009 was pretty bad?
Absolutely. As you may recall, the 2009 outbreak of H1N1 was pretty horrific. There was a large number of folks that got very ill, including a number of deaths in the United States and worldwide. And we even had to create a separate vaccine just for this on a fast-track basis in an attempt to get it under control. That outbreak was definitely eye-opening for many in the public health arena, and I think that since then, that particular strain has been included in the mix for the flu vaccine.
Is this the same strain that caused the 1918 pandemic?
Well, so flu vaccines undergo a lot of rearrangements and in their genetic structure, and so I would not say it's the same, but it includes some of the more higher risk elements from the 2018 outbreak. And so the 09 and the 1918 outbreak both share some of the same elements. They're not exactly the same virus, which is a good thing, because that 1918 virus was pretty bad.
With flu cases picking up, anything special going on at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital to combat that?
Well, we've vaccinated our entire medical staff, our nursing staff, and our support staff at the hospital. And we've also started a deployment of hand hygiene as the most important mechanism to help protect healthcare workers as well as patients from transmission of the virus. We also have restrictions to visitors, especially to certain areas of the hospital that are taking care of our most immunocompromised patients. And in general, we restrict children from visiting the hospital during the flu season to try to prevent transmission of the virus, including the flu viruses, but, you know, other viruses that are respiratory viruses that children can carry that can then get transmitted to sick individuals in the hospital.
So these are some new restrictions?
Well, these will be coming online as we enter the flu season.
Have we technically entered the flu season yet, Dr. Patel?
We've entered the flu season at our hospital, and I think that other hospitals in the area are probably doing the same sorts of activities. I think the most important thing everyone can do is get their flu shot if you haven't, and wash your hands.
Thanks, Dr. Patel. Salute Care's Dr. Nirav Patel is the Chief Medical Officer at SSML St. Louis University Hospital. He's also an infectious diseases specialist. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about those blood pressure medications that have been recalled over cancer concerns. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Another batch of blood pressure medicine has been recalled. Here to talk with us about that is cardiologist Dr. Aaron Tang with SSM Health. Dr. Tang, thanks for joining us. What blood pressure medicine has been recalled?
The medication that's most recently been recalled is a medication called valsartan. Valsartan is a blood pressure medication used for both treating hypertension and heart failure. And it's been recalled because it contains unacceptable amounts of a material called MDEA, which is a carcinogen, potential carcinogen in humans if ingested in too high of a level.
What is a carcinogen?
Oh, sorry about that. The carcinogen is a substance that can cause cancer in human beings. So this particular byproduct of the manufacturing process, it's been found that in high levels in animal models to cause cancerous cells to be growing in the liver. So it's presumed that they may also be cancerous in human beings.
Is it just valsartan that's been recalled, or are there some other medications recalled?
So valsartan is the most recent of the medications in this class called the angiotensin receptor blockers. Another medication that was recalled in a small amount was a medication called losartan. And then earlier in the year, last year, 2018, irbesartan was also recalled in small portions. If you're worried about which one of your medications, if your medication is affected, the best thing to do would be to look at your pill bottle and call the pharmacy and ask them if the particular bottle you have is affected. If it's found to be affected, I would then call your physician and see what procedures they would like you to follow. But you should not discontinue the medication on your own, though. That would most likely be detrimental to the conditions that your doctor is treating currently.
How big is the risk of getting cancer from one of these drugs?
Well, there has been no official link to cancer at the moment from anyone taking these medications. Currently, the recall is voluntary. So the companies that are they're affected have voluntarily taken the medications off the market because the level that is detected is greater than the acceptable limit. In the animal models where this substance caused cancer, they were ingested in very, very large quantities of the substance. But even a small amount above the acceptable level is not, you know, considered acceptable to be given out as a product to consumers. So it's been recalled. The risk itself is kind of hard to gauge, but it's dose dependent. So if someone were to ingest a lot of it, they would put themselves at risk of developing cancer. However, I can't give a specific amount that you should or should not take. This substance is actually found in very small quantities in drinking water and in particular types of meat. So we do consume a very small portion of it at times. But again, the reason it's been recalled is because it's the level that was detected is above the acceptable amount according to the FDA.
So if you do take one of these drugs that's been recalled, first check with your pharmacist to see if it actually is one of the affected products, and then talk to your physician. And what would your physician recommend?
Well, on a case-by-case basis, for my office, if a person does have an affected a lot, I can prescribe a substitute angiotensin receptor blocker, which I think would do the trick, but would not be affected or not have levels that have been found to be too high. Other physicians may do something different, but I think that most people are doing substitutions. There's also a different class of medications you can use for substituting this medication to treat both high blood pressure and heart failure. So, again, it depends on which physician, what their office has decided that they're going to do to address this particular issue. Now, the other thing is that it's not a problem with valsartan itself. It's a problem with the manufacturing process at a particular plant. So someone else's valsartan made from a different plant might be totally unaffected, and therefore they should continue to take that medication. So, again, it's more nuanced than just stopping this particular medication or this particular class of medications.
And some of the questionable plants are in other countries. Can the FDA do anything about that?
Well, the FDA really is, just governs what we do in the United States, and it makes suggestions on how people should go about their quality control and the manufacturing process that they're using to produce this medication. This medication went generic a few years ago, and that's why there's different places doing different processes to make this drug now. So each manufacturer themselves are responsible for how they conduct their quality control and getting this taken care of. But in terms of if we can affect other countries, we don't have that kind of reach, so we would just be, I believe that the FDA would do their best to warn people, and then I think if people stop using that medication, they would force those companies to reevaluate how they're doing their testing and their quality control.
We're talking with cardiologist Dr. Aaron Tang at SSM Health. Dr. Tang, how big is high blood pressure in America?
High blood pressure is something that affects a large portion of the United States. It's the major thing that cardiologists treat. Also, it's something that if it's left untreated, can increase your risk of coronary artery disease, of stroke, and other cardiovascular problems. So it's something that affects a large portion, and if left untreated, can lead to a lot of detrimental effects. So I think that if you do have high blood pressure and you are receiving treatment for it, it's very important for you to take your medications as prescribed and listen to the recommendations that your doctor has made for you.
In 2018, didn't the guidelines for what constitutes high blood pressure change?
Yeah, there was a recommendation to lower the definition of what is defined as high blood pressure. It was previously 140 and greater for the systolic number. It was 140 over 90, actually, is the official recommendation for being high blood pressure. And that was recently a little bit more restrictive. The systolic number was reduced to 130. You know, this is something that the hope was that they would catch more of these patients that were previously considered pre-hypertensive in an attempt to reduce their progression to having other cardiovascular complications such as heart attacks or stroke. It's been received in a mixed fashion because obviously if the standard for labeling blood pressure is lowered, it causes more people to be placed on medications, increases the burden on that population. And like I said, I think that some physicians have felt that it's a bit too restrictive and, you know, that we may be over-medicating. Currently, I'm still using the 140 measure for patients that strictly have high blood pressure. But if a patient has other risk factors, such as a high family history or maybe even diabetes, I've been a little bit more judicious at keeping their blood pressure better controlled.
And Dr. Tang, your advice to people to actually try to deal with their blood pressure without medication would be what?
Well, lifestyle modifications are one of the first things that we suggest if a person's coming in with elevated blood pressure as a sole problem. And those lifestyle modifications, one of them would be to try to engage in moderate exercise for about 150 minutes weekly. That comes out to be, you know, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And when I say moderate exercise, it depends on where you're starting. But if you've never exercised before, even just brisk walking for that 30 minutes can be beneficial. Some studies that have looked at just at lifestyle modifications have shown that people's blood pressure can be lowered, you know, 15 to 20% just on those modifications. Other things that you could look towards doing would be reducing your weight. You know, it's been found that people who BMIs are in the more normal range, you know, less than 25 or so, also have found that their blood pressure will become better controlled. So I think that if you, you know, will be a little bit more judicious about exercise and trying to work on keeping your weight at an acceptable level, I think those are great non-medical or non-pharmaceutical ways to reduce your blood pressure.
Dr. Tang, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Dr. Aaron Tang is a cardiologist with SSM Health. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the top diets for 2019. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Well, we're at the start of another new year, and that means it's time to deal with our New Year's resolutions. How are you doing with eating better? Many of us say we want to eat better during the new year, but just what does that mean? We're joined now by Jessica Stafford. She's a clinical dietitian for SSM Health. She's based at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in Lake St. Louis. Jessica, thanks for joining us. What do we mean when we say we want to eat better?
What it means to eat better is to look at your current lifestyle and decide which habits need to stay and which habits need to go in the new year. For example, if you exercise on a regular basis but you only eat fast food, then that fast food habit needs to go and you can replace it by eating more meals at home. Maybe if you eat well but on the other hand you're a couch potato, then to be healthy in the new year, that inactivity habit needs to go and it needs to be replaced by some regular exercise.
How much should we eat? Is there a set rule?
That is a great question. And no, there is not a set rule. What your body needs is different for each person. If you are somebody who is very active, your body is going to need more food. Food is fuel.
So is the goal just to cut calories from our diet, or does it depend on the person?
It depends on the person. You need to put healthy calories in your body, and by healthy calories, I mean food calories that come from whole foods such as whole grains, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, and low-fat dairy products, but you also need to exercise.
How important are carbohydrates to our diet?
That is an excellent question and one that I get quite often. Carbohydrates over the past few years have gotten a bad rap, all of the fad diets out there make carbohydrates the enemy, and that is simply not true. Your body needs carbohydrates. We want half of the calories you consume to come from carbohydrate foods, such as fruits, starchy vegetables like potatoes and peas, dairy products like milk and yogurt. Carbohydrates, what they do is they supply your body with fuel. Just like you put gasoline in your car to get from point A to point B, you need to fuel your body with carbohydrates throughout the course of the day. You need carbohydrates at breakfast to help you get through your morning, and then at lunchtime, you refuel with more carbohydrates to help you get through your afternoon. Carbohydrates are the only type of fuel that your brain can run on. In several of the fad diets that are on the market nowadays, they completely eliminate the carbohydrates. And after a while, that affects your thinking. You're no longer nourishing your brain, so you're no longer able to think as clearly as you could when you were eating the carbohydrates.
Jessica, how closely should we monitor the fats and sugars in our diet?
We should aim for eating a diet that includes a wide variety of heart-healthy fat, because just like carbohydrates, your body does need some fat to stay healthy. Examples of heart-healthy fats include olive oil, avocados, nuts, and seeds. Those fats help keep your body healthy without affecting your heart. They do not raise your total cholesterol. As far as fats that we need to maybe watch out for, those would be the saturated fats and the trans fats. Saturated fats are going to be found in processed foods like crackers and snack cakes and potato chips. And saturated fat is also going to be found in animal products like whole milk and your really fatty cuts of meat. The saturated fat and the trans fat, they're not good for us because they raise our total cholesterol and put us at risk of developing heart disease down the road. And as far as sugar goes, everything we eat has a little bit of natural sugar in it. So an apple is going to have a little bit of natural sugar. A cup of milk is going to have a little bit of natural sugar. So is a slice of bread. And that's okay. We don't want to avoid that type of sugar. It's the added sugar we want to try and stay away from. So lots of our snack foods, our sugary cereals, our regular soda, they have a lot of added sugar in them that our body just does not need.
We're talking with Jessica Stafford. She's an SSM Health clinical dietitian based at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in Lake St. Louis. Jessica, U.S. News and World Report came out this past week with the best diets for 2019. They took a look at 41 diets and ranked them with a panel of health experts. The best diets overall, they came up with three. Number one best diet overall was the Mediterranean diet. Tell us about that.
The Mediterranean diet is a wonderful diet. It is something that we use and educate our patients on at the hospital. The Mediterranean diet includes focusing on a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. It includes fish. It includes nuts and seeds and other heart-healthy fats like avocado. It's low in saturated fat, and it's full of fiber.
The number two diet overall, according to U.S. News and World Report, is the DASH diet.
The DASH diet is another diet that we promote at the hospital. The DASH diet teaches people to limit their sodium intake. Sodium is in everything we eat, and a little bit of natural sodium is okay. It's the added sodium that's in food that gets us into trouble. Sodium, it acts like a sponge. It makes your body retain water, and all that extra fluid, all that extra water, it's hard on your heart, and it's extra weight that you're carrying around. And unfortunately, when we go to the grocery store, all of those items that come in a box or a can, they have a lot of sodium in them because sodium is also used as a preservative.
Jessica, U.S. News and World Report says the third best overall diet is the flexitarian diet. Tell me about that.
The flexitarian diet is another good choice. Like the previous two diets, the Mediterranean and the DASH diet, it does include a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And with a flexitarian diet, what you're doing is you're replacing at least one meal a week with a vegetarian meal. Instead of having animal protein at a meal, you're having vegetable protein like beans.
And the best weight loss diet, according to U.S. News and World Report, is the Weight Watchers diet.
Yes, the Weight Watchers diet has been around for a very long time, and it has really improved over the recent years. The Weight Watchers diet, again, it wants you to eat those fruits, those vegetables, and the whole grains. And what it does is it gives you each food item points. The points are based on the calories, the fat, the fiber, and what you want to do is eat within your point limit. So what it does is if you eat junk food on a regular basis, those junk foods are going to be worth a lot of points. So you learn to eat the healthier foods. Instead of having potato chips, you would have popcorn, which would be lower in points.
What's your thought about the keto diet? That was listed as one of the best fast weight loss diets.
The keto diet is so popular right now. Did you know that the keto diet was actually invented in the early 1920s as a medical nutrition therapy way to treat epilepsy? Once the epilepsy medicines improved, that diet was no longer needed, but it has resurfaced again here in 2018, 2019 as a popular diet. With the keto diet, it's pretty extreme because you're cutting out all of the major sources of carbohydrate. And unfortunately, when you cut out major food groups like that, it's very hard to sustain.
So, Jessica, go over once again, what are your basic tips we need to know if we want to get into a diet and eat better in the new year?
To eat better in the new year, again, look at your current lifestyle, your eating habits, your exercising habits, and decide which habits are working for you and which ones you need to change. Once you figure out what you need to work on, maybe enlist some help. If you're trying to eat better but you're feeling overwhelmed by all of the diet information that's out there, I recommend making an appointment with a registered dietitian. We are food and nutrition experts, and we will give you evidence-based recommendations, not fad diets, to help improve your eating habits. I also recommend setting SMART goals for yourself. A SMART goal is a goal that is specific, it's measurable, it is achievable, it's realistic and timely. So for the new year, instead of saying, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this month, take a step back and say, I'm going to set a weight loss goal of 5 pounds this month, and I'm going to do it by improving my eating habits, maybe giving up some added sugar like regular soda and incorporating exercise.
Jessica, thanks a lot for your time. Really do appreciate it.
No problem. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
Jessica Stafford is a clinical dietitian for SSM Health. She's based at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in Lake St. Louis. Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you.
And as we near the end of this week's show, we bring back our co-host, Lou Cares Dr. Nirav Patel, the chief medical officer at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital, to share his health tip for the week. Dr. Patel, what do you have?
Well, as the flu season is sort of kicking off now, I think it's very important that everyone get their flu shot if they haven't already, and ensure that you're washing your hands and practicing good respiratory etiquette. If you're sneezing or having to blow your nose, obviously you want to sneeze or blow your nose into a Kleenex and then wash your hands afterwards to try to avoid spreading viruses.
Good deal. Thanks a lot, Dr. Patel.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next week at this same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.